Your deep dive into adaptations. I'm Lois Mitchell.
And I'm not Lois Mitchell, I'm Bradley Walker.
Today we are looking at Warm Bodies, which is by Isaac Marion. It is ostensibly a zombie romance book, but we'll get into whether it is that or not.
Basically, there's been a zombie apocalypse. At some point during that, our story begins.
Yeah.
We're following the main character, a zombie named R, and basically he
saves a girl's life when they're attacking some humans, because he eats the brain of her boyfriend, and when zombies do that, they get the memories of the person, so he immediately falls in love with her. Which is a bit creepy, but he saves her and takes her back to his home, basically.
Which is an airplane,
and tries to get her to stay with him, but she wants to go back to her home, obviously. So he takes her back there, and then follows her into the human settlement, and then a bunch of stuff happens with him running around the human settlement. This is where the plots diverge a little bit, but in the book, he accidentally bites someone, or accidentally on purpose bites someone, and the place goes into lockdown, and then there's a showdown between her and him and her dad. And during this, the bad sort of zombies, the bonies, are attacking, and the good zombies who are all changing back into humans are helping basically to stop the bonies. In the end, Julie, who's the girl, and R, who's the zombie, kiss, and this turns him back into a human, or finalizes turning him back into a human. And that's sort of the end of the book.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll get into how the book and the movie differ as we're talking about it. Okay, so let's go into the characters, I guess. I thought that the characterization in the movie was pretty good. We've got Nicholas Holt as R, who's the main zombie, Teresa Palmer as Julie, Leo Tipton as Nora, Rob Corddry as M, who is R's sort of zombie friend, Dave Franco as Perry, who's Julie's boyfriend, and John Malkovich as Grigio, who's Julie's father. So they really cut down the characters quite a bit from the book. The notable one that who's missing is General Rosso.
Yeah.
But I think they kind of collapsed him into Grigio in the movie, especially with his actions at the end.
Yeah, the changes that they made to especially Grigio, but even just sort of what the story was about, to some extent, meant that Rosso wasn't really needed anymore.
Yeah. And just some subsidiary characters and people. The world in the movie is quite narrow. Like, you do see other people, but they don't interact with them. So it really just seems like a story around three or four people.
Yeah, I think even in the book, it's pretty, like, they've basically taken all of the people who the story really needs.
Yeah.
It's just that you don't have as much time for minor one-off people as you do in the book.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing to note is that Nora in the book is a person of colour and in the movie is white. So that's kind of frustrating. But apart from that, the characterization is pretty good. I think Nicholas Holt does a really good job of being a zombie, and Rob Corddry's funny in his role. He's always funny.
Yeah. The only thing so in the book, his character doesn't look like him.
Yeah. But
not in a way that really mattered. He was good in the role.
Yeah, well, he's still bald, but
Well, the character in the book had blonde hair.
Blonde beard, but he was bald on top. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But he was meant to be like 6'5" and really muscly.
Yeah, really muscly, yeah. 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 I thought Teresa Palmer did a good job as Julie, though that's probably a less difficult role than the zombie role.
Yeah, probably. I was surprised that I didn't know her from anything else.
Yeah, she's a strong actress. It was surprising that she's not better known.
Yeah, on Wikipedia she had a bunch of things she'd been in and I just hadn't seen any of them. Yeah. So that might be part of it.
And then John Malkovich is obviously really good. He's always good in things, even though I think maybe he's a little bit of an overactor, but it always works in the things that he's in. I think he chooses his films well, because he's always like these intense sort of characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I guess it's fine as long as you pick roles where that's appropriate. Yeah. Yeah, he was good in this.
Okay, yeah.
I'd forgotten that Dave Franco was in the movie at all. Like, I remembered Rob Corddry and Nicholas Hoult and John Malkovich and totally forgot that I knew anyone else. But it sort of makes sense because he's only in it for maybe 10 minutes in total.
Yeah. It was funny when I was reading the characters off IMDb. I was like, oh, Dave Franco. I wonder if he's related to James Franco. And then they look exactly the same. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, it's his brother. Yeah. Like, I thought it was, but I think I'd heard of Dave Franco, but...
You would have seen him in things.
Yeah, I probably have seen him in things, but I was just like, oh, I wonder if that's the same Franco. It definitely is. So this book and movie are really thick on themes. So your main one would be Love Conquers All, with the theme of love that was kind of a Romeo and Juliet parable, isn't it?
I mean, I think that's where their names come from, right?
Yeah, R and Julie, yeah.
I didn't work that out until 2/3 of the way through the book. It said R and J, and I was like, wait a second.
Yeah, right at the end, it was right at the end for me when she's like, what do you think your name is? And I was like, oh, Romeo, right. That's who he's meant to be.
Maybe, so in the book, they did that bit, but it was just sort of felt like, because M had revealed that his name was Marcus. So it felt like, okay, you need now R to talk about that. But in the film, they turn that into like this significant concluding bit.
Yeah.
And I was like, to me, this isn't that meaningful. So it was sort of weird to end with that, as if it sort of summarizes the movie or something. But maybe that they were thinking of, like, maybe to them it was linking it to Romeo and Juliet, and so it was more of a significant moment than I had thought of.
The other part which links it to Romeo and Juliet is the balcony scene.
Yes. Yes. I didn't think of
which that. Which I didn't peg at the time, but when I was watching the movie, I was like, oh, yeah, this is Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. There's also sort of questions. A lot in the book's really philosophical about what makes humanity, basically. Because it's asking questions about whether the zombies who are cognizant of what's going on are actually human or not. So I don't think the movie poses those questions quite as much, but it's definitely like the central theme around which they're both set, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I think the movie takes a more kind of conventional zombie apocalypse sort of setting. So in the book, that's not even the first apocalypse. They don't really explain anything, which is probably good, but it alludes to the fact that there were all sorts of other plagues before zombies started. So like the ground isn't really useful for growing food anymore and things like that. So that it was sort of like there were all these other problems they were having, and then the zombie plague was just part of that.
Yeah.
So there's much more of a tone of like humanity is really on its last legs. And the one of the changes they've made to a lot of the human characters is that they're, so in the book, like depression and hopelessness is like a big deal for a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the film, they're just kind of normal people who are trying to survive an apocalypse.
Yeah.
And so I think the movie has simplified all that to be the more conventional thing, just because it's easier and removes a lot of the stuff that probably wouldn't work that well in film anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does affect sort of what the themes are.
Yeah. I think they slightly suggest in the movie that the zombies weren't the first thing. Like there's a shot of a newspaper.
Oh, right at the beginning with the headline.
Yeah, with the headlines. Yeah. There's a shot of, it's like towards the middle. Okay. What am I trying to say? You know, in America, how they have those newspaper things that are on the corners.
Oh, like a stand or something.
Yeah. And you can like put money in and get a paper out.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. They have one of those and it says the title of the paper says, "Is this the end?" Which to me suggests that the zombies, to me, a zombie apocalypse happens really fast.
Yeah, so maybe you wouldn't have time.
Wouldn't have time to print a headline like that.
Yeah, potentially, yeah. The other thing is, though, right at the start of the movie, when Ara's sort of narrating what the scenario is, I think they showed some sort of just like panning shots.
Yeah, and bombs going off and that kind of thing. So probably war and that kind of thing preceded the zombie apocalypse. Yeah.
Although you could also read that as, you know, trying to fight back against the zombies.
Yeah, definitely. It's
possible they could have met either way.
Yeah. Did you have any other themes?
Well, I guess going on from that, I don't think the book was about love. To me, the book was about hope. Really.
Yeah.
So a big part of reading the book for me was that the whole way through, I'm like, but what is causing the zombies to change? Because so once upon a time, when this movie first came out, I saw the film, I think at the drive-in, actually. So I saw it, like, when it first was out, and then I read the book, and that was years ago now. But what I had remembered is as if it really was that, you know, zombie falls in love, and that is a cure for zombieism, and somehow that spreads, and it wasn't really clear to me. It might be that I'd just forgotten what I had thought of the book, but I think maybe having watched the film first, I just read the book as entirely consistent with what I already had learned from the film. Whereas this time I read the book before I watched the film, and I was surprised that love would, like, it wasn't even really clear that they were in love. They kissed at the end, and clearly they wanted to spend time together and that kind of thing, but it wasn't very romantic. And I think it might have been weird if it tried to be more romantic. Although it sort of worked in the film the way they did it. But yeah, so I guess for me, reading the book, a big part of it was trying to work out what is causing the sort of reversion to be becoming human again. And maybe about halfway through, I started to think, it seemed like it was more about the spreading of hope rather than love, really. Even though they're related, of course, and, you know, feeling love towards someone can make you hopeful and excited for the future and that kind of thing. So they're not totally disconnected. But I think that really worked because, for one thing, a lot of the humans have problems with the fact that they don't have hope anymore. So, for instance, they made a fairly major change with Perry, where in the film, he's basically just the guy who dies. That's sort of his whole character. It was clear that he and Julie were sort of having problems and, you know, probably just stress because they're in an apocalypse and, you know, people change over time and they're quite young. But in the book, it was more like it was basically suicidal and just had nothing left that he wanted to live for.
Yeah.
Which first of all meant that I think they tried to use that to make it that we could sort of forgive Ara for having killed him because it was like, well, he's probably happier now anyway.
Yeah.
Which was a little bit awkward, but I think it worked anyway because it was just like, it fit with the theme of hopelessness that
Barry. Well, because Ara's the narrator in the book, you hear all his reasoning for killing and you hear how hopeless both times that he kills someone in the book, you hear how hopeless he feels about it, that he literally couldn't help it.
Yeah.
That it's this driving force that he needs to kill.
Yeah.
And both times he regrets it immediately afterwards. So
when the second time he did it in the book that isn't in the movie was also just because he'd been caught and they were going to kill him.
Yeah.
So it was sort of self-defense.
Yeah, and he like vomits it up straight away.
Yeah, he doesn't want to eat it anymore.
And yeah, so it's interesting that you feel for him when he's killing people, killing humans.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, in most zombie movies the zombies are just the, like, driving evil, aren't they?
Yeah, they're not usually the protagonist.
Yeah.
It's, like, iZombie is similar to this, I guess.
Yeah.
It's sort of about a zombie, but and also the memory thing with eat brains and get the memories. But yeah, it was probably a novelty of this that the zombies are more of the like the point of view that you have rather than just the sort of faceless inhuman monster that is the enemy. But yeah, so on top of Perry having the hopelessness thing, they changed Grigio quite a lot as well because he, it's a similar sort of situation. It's not that he wants to die, I don't think, but he is very closed off and not a good father.
He's given up on humanity quite a lot. Like, he wants to protect everyone, but also not really for altruistic reasons. Like, it's like the only thing that drives him anymore.
Yeah, but so maybe more duty than hope of a future.
Yeah, not it wasn't hope-based.
Yeah.
Not like it is for Julie.
Yeah. And in fact, his character dies at the end of the book, but not in the film.
Yeah.
And I think that was basically like, there's nothing else for him at that point.
Yeah, definitely. We'll get there, but definitely in the book, at the moment before he dies, he definitely basically tells Julie, like, there's nothing for me.
Yeah.
In what happens.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And the hope thing also applies to Julie because she just doesn't want to live with the humans anymore. So in the movie they do a lot of more, like, they lean more on the romance side of it. So a lot of with Julie wanting to spend time with Ara is because she misses him and that kind of thing. And that was true in the book, but it was sort of a secondary motivation for her, where I think more she just wanted to get out of the stadium where they were all living and not, like, it was difficult for her to be there and she wanted to kind of run away, and Ara was her way of potentially doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So all the sort of stuff in the book was about how the changes that were happening with the zombies were allowing the humans to think, oh, maybe there is something to continue living for. And so it was almost about fixing the humans rather than about fixing the zombies, even though fixing the zombies became how you get the fix for the humans.
Yeah.
Whereas in the movie, the humans are basically fine. It's just these annoying zombies who are stopping them from living their lives.
Yeah.
And then so curing the zombies is sort of the only goal that you have in the film.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, the bonies are sort of a symbol for the inevitability of death, in a way, in the book, which fits with the hopelessness thing, because they're, like, by getting hope again, it sort of cures the zombieism, because they're no longer a sort of trend towards becoming bonies, I guess.
Yeah.
So it fits as the
opposite. Yeah, because you see in the book and the movie, when the zombies give up, that's when they become bonies.
Yeah.
But if they keep trying to mimic humans, then they stay as fleshies, is what they call them, where they're still mostly whole and not rotting.
Yeah. And I think the final point I had on that is that I don't think they really do this in the movie, but in the book it's a big thing that Ara and Julie just want to somehow fix everything, and they don't really have a plan, but they keep, like, they want to do it anyway. And normally that would be a flaw, but in this specific case, because the thing that matters is that people have hope, it doesn't matter that they have no plan. The fact that they want to try is the thing that achieves everything.
Yeah.
Because it means they have hope, and that's what is spreading to other people.
Yeah, we're spreading it.
Yeah. They did do a bit of the spread stuff with love in the film, where, so for instance, I think they mainly showed it with M. So when M notices that R has feelings for Julie, then later on it shows M, like, sort of staring at a photo on a wall in the airport.
Of people holding hands.
Yeah, and it's like he remembers what it's like to have those feelings for someone. And then he starts to change as well, and all the zombies around him sort of implied that they're doing the same kind of thing. So it's still basically about emotion spreading. But it's interesting how it seems like it's love in one and hope in the other. And of course, as I said, those are related. But also the fact that in the movie it doesn't really matter for the humans, whereas in the book it feels like actually fixing the humans is maybe the main focus.
Yeah. So let's talk about the changes in the narrative. I think we've kind of touched on them a bit, but we'll just go through quickly. So it starts off pretty the same. R lives in the airport with the other zombies. Then they go on a hunt and he kills Perry and saves Julie.
They do skip over some stuff that happens in the book, where sort of setting up the zombies kind of have society.
Yeah.
So this was a bit weird, actually. I wondered if it was from a previous draft, but R gets married and has some zombie kids that are just sort of allocated to him. And yeah. This is like in the course of an afternoon. This all sort of falls into place.
Yeah, that is weird in the book.
Yeah.
And it sort of goes nowhere.
It was sort of fun to get the moment later where, because he doesn't really have any emotional connection to them, because the whole thing with the zombies is that they don't really have emotions. The only thing that really drives them is confusion sometimes, where they're just like, what? So when Julie shows up and they're just sort of like, this is weird. Okay. I wonder what's going on. But they're not like angry or anything. And then fear of the bonies, I guess, later. But yeah, the only thing I felt that they really got out of having their wife and kids was just a couple of fun moments where like it shows how the wife is having an affair with another zombie after R has kind of abandoned the family for Julie.
Yeah. Also, I think it shows, because you tend to think of zombies as like adults, but I think it's good having the kids there.
Yeah.
And they showed the parallel bits of the, in the book, of the baby zombies being trained to kill humans by the bonies, and then the children in the camp being trained to kill zombies. I thought that was a really interesting parallel. It's like both societies are, training their youth to come up exactly how they come up.
That was interesting.
And that definitely plays into the no, things need to change narrative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can see why they removed that stuff from the movie, because the whole thing of zombies having society is a bit weird, and it would just require a lot of explanation.
Yeah.
It didn't really.
Yeah, because there is a lot in the book before Perry and Julie come in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a couple of chapters, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I can totally see how they moved that. However, they did keep the children there, even though, so they weren't allocated to R or anything. But from what I remembered of the descriptions, I think it was the same kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Where just, a few shots where they just show some kid zombies standing around. And then at the end when they had been cured and showed them playing around with human kids.
Human kids, yeah. One change I noted was, so in the book, the humans are living in a stadium. They've boarded up a stadium and they're living in the grounds of the stadium. There's a nod to that in that, the way that Julie and Perry get out of the city is through a stadium.
And the way that R gets back in.
Yeah, and the way that R gets back in. But they're actually, it's a walled-off city that they're living in, so it's probably a lot more people than the book suggests.
Yeah, and I sort of wondered why they did that, and I think it might have been partly just because it would have been a nightmare to have to build all the sets as if it was, like, stuff people had built inside the stadium as opposed to using existing buildings.
Yeah, I think it was easier to CGI a wall in around a city than it was to probably
You'd probably have to actually build everything in the stadium, yeah. And the other thing was, I think by having, like, a walled-off part within a city, it allows them to kind of lean on pre-existing, like, that's sort of a normal thing in zombie stuff.
Yeah, I made a note about no kids or wife. The zombies talk less at the start.
I also noticed that.
Yeah, in the movie. Apart from R, who talks quite a bit. But even then, he starts off pretty monosyllabic. Whereas in the book, he can say, I think, 4 syllables to start off with. And so can M. And then we see his journey as he gets more and more syllables that he can say in a row to Julie, as he starts becoming more and more human. But yeah, definitely like he and Em are conversational with each other, whereas in the first scene we see Em, all they can do is groan at each other and say like hungry. So yeah, that's different. But I think that's to show that they're going on a journey towards humanity.
I think
it's an easy way to show it.
And it's more obvious that he becomes able to talk than if he could already do like 3/4 of what he ends up doing anyway.
Yeah.
So it's easier to show nothing to everything rather than some to most.
Yeah. I listened to the audiobook, which was really good because the reader was doing voices for everybody.
Yeah.
And so I really got the effect of the way that he talked.
Yeah.
A lot more, I think, than I would have if I was reading it.
Did whoever was reading it talk like the zombies talked in the movie?
Yes.
Because in the way that I read it in my head, because it's just like word, dot, 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 another word kind of thing. So it's easy, like, it doesn't take as long as watching him try to talk in the movie, but it was also, I hadn't really imagined it to be as, like, breathy.
Yeah.
And so I actually, there were some times in the movie where I was like, I have no idea what he just said. Because the music was really loud and the talking for the zombies was quite
quiet. Yeah, that was really annoying for me as well because there was no captions.
Yeah.
On the one that we watched. So I was, I couldn't understand a lot because especially because they're mumbling.
Yeah.
So they're not really moving their mouths. So I couldn't even lip read what they were saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really frustrating.
But I think because it was only really a few words.
Yeah.
Probably in total. It didn't really, because especially towards the end, they are louder because they can talk more because they're being cured. But I wondered whether it was maybe possibly a coincidence, but a good one, where the fact that they didn't have as much talking with the zombies meant that the movie was more watchable.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I found the audiobook really good for that reason, that they put a lot of effort into the zombie voices, well, everybody's voices. So it was like kind of like watching a movie. It got really tense at places, I think, in the audiobook. Whereas I would have not felt that tension so much in reading it, I think.
Right.
It was good. I made a note, there's less Frank Sinatra. I don't think there's any Frank Sinatra.
I specifically made a note about that as well, where reading the book, I was like, I didn't really remember whether or not they had in the movie, but I was like, I bet they're not going to have so much music in the film. But they did rely a lot on music.
Yeah.
It just wasn't the same music.
Yeah. So R has a record player in the jet that he lives in, that he's collected when he's been out getting food, and all these records that he's found. And in the, it's a motif in the book that he plays Frank Sinatra for Julie in the plane, and then he sings lines from the song that he played for her later on through the book to tell her things. Like, you're going to be okay, and there's hope around the corner and that kind of thing. Instead of, because he can't really vocalize that himself, he just sings the lines that sort of display those emotions, which is kind of a cool, I kind of liked.
I think especially at the beginning when he can't talk very easily, and even when he can actually say things, it's sort of like, how do I turn this into one word?
Yeah.
And so I think he sort of uses the music as a way to communicate with her.
Yeah. Because he's having these huge philosophical ideas, or at least very long-winded discussions with himself, but he can't verbalize them.
Yeah. And even just at the beginning, of course, he's just brought her to the airplane, and she's not as panicky as she is in the movie, but it's still this, like, you know, she feels like she's being kidnapped by a zombie. She has no idea what is happening. And he can't really explain to her anything.
Yeah, so he uses music to show her that she doesn't need to be scared of him.
Yeah, just to be sort of reassuring. Like, even just to show that zombies have music. Yeah.
And the same happens in the movie. He puts on a record and that's when she kind of realizes, like, oh, because he's got his eyes closed, he's listening to it, and she's like, oh, he's getting, like, emotion from this.
Yeah.
There's something different about him, kind of thing. That was a cool motif in the movie. I really liked it.
Yeah, and so even just aside from that specific thing with the record player, they do use music a lot in the movie. Like, I guess every movie has music, right?
Or
not every, but, you know, the vast majority of movies have a lot of music in them.
Yeah, but they don't tend to have so many songs.
Yeah.
It doesn't tend to be songs that... It tends to be background music,
yeah,
not songs that relate to what's happening.
And even this felt like it was using the music more than just as a way to sort of underscore the things that were happening. It was sort of like relying on it in a more overt way, maybe.
Yeah, it felt very Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, kind
of way of using music,
and probably similar music choices.
as opposed to your usual, especially for a horror movie, they use music quite effectively in horror movies. Yeah, it's just a different way of using it.
And then, yeah, I think more, they used it more in a sort of a comedy-ish way.
Yeah.
Like Guardians of the Galaxy, where it's like the juxtaposition of the, you know, like 80s pop music or whatever it was with...
what's happening. This,
yeah, with the, you know, apocalypse.
Yeah. One of the changes in the action bit of the movie where they're trying to leave the airport, is in the book they're confronted by the Bonies, and the Bonies have a moment of communicating with R, where they show R photos of humans killing zombies, basically. R is like, no, Julie's not like that, and something's happening, we're changing. And then the Bonies attack them, whereas in the movie we never get the impression that the Bonies are anything other than basically murder machines.
Yeah. So in the book I had forgotten that they basically are murder machines later on.
Yeah.
And so initially when that happened, so I think it's before they try to escape, it's just, or she's got out.
But it's when, before they actually go to leave. When M attacks her.
Yeah. And then they go back into the airplane after that. And then later on when they leave, the Bonies do attack.
Yeah.
But the bit when they're not actually attacking, reading that, I was like, oh, so, okay, this is really interesting because it's showing that the Bonies don't even have anger. They're just a bit confused about what is going on. And they're trying to show, oh, no, this doesn't add up. Like,
yeah.
You know, you're supposed to kill the people. But then, of course, later on, they basically are just murder machines. So
yeah.
I was not surprised that they changed that for the movie. But it was sort of an interesting moment in the book where, just sort of showing that the Bonies are consistent with the other zombies and just sort of lacking all emotion.
Yeah. There's an interesting parallel between them and Grigio as well in the book, because they're unable to change, just like Grigio is unable to change.
Yeah.
Their hatred of the other side kind of thing. And I thought that was just really interesting.
Yeah. Before we get too far away from it, when Perry died, so the bit where R and his friends are attacking the humans.
Yeah.
Did you get the impression in the movie that they were trying to show that R saw Julie and had, like, love at first sight?
Yes, definitely.
And then he killed Perry?
Yeah.
Whereas in the book, it was more like he killed Perry and then, you know, ate some of his brain, had some memories, turned around, recognize Julie from the memory.
Yes, definitely.
And it wasn't even necessary that he fell in love. It was just he had a, you know, empathy for her because of sort of knowing her via.
Yeah, it was like he had leftover almost withdrawals from the brain. And so he was, in that moment, he felt empathy for her. And then kind of after that, he was like, oh, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
He was confused about why he was doing it.
But it was giving him hope for the future and everything. So he kept, So that was, it surprised me in the film when they had that, because I was like, so in the book, it's sort of unclear what exactly was the root cause of everything that happened, whether it was something weird about Perry's brain, for instance, or whether it was, you know, something else was changing in the world that allowed this, because it's clear that Perry's brain is having more of an effect on R than other brains have in the past. Mm-hmm. But it's not really clear if there's something weird about R or something weird about Perry or something weird about other parts of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
But then in the film, Perry's brain wasn't even really needed because I wasn't sure if they were just trying to foreshadow that, in a minute he's going to eat the brain and then he'll have feelings. Or if they're trying to say, no, he's having feelings right now and eating the brain is sort of a separate.
Yeah, because doesn't his heart beat in that moment before he eats the brain? I'm pretty sure he sees her and his heart beats, because that's how they show that the zombies are changing, is that their hearts beat for the first time in however long.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure in the movie, it shows him seeing her, his heart beats, and then he eats the brain.
Even if his heart doesn't beat, which it might, I don't remember, it definitely has the, like, you know, slow motion type, you know, music gets loud, he's staring at her.
Yeah.
To me that was just a bit weird, because you could equally have had him eat the brain and then have that.
Yeah.
So I wasn't sure why they made that change, or if they even realized that it was a change.
Yeah, it was definitely not necessary for us to get the point.
Yeah, I mean, well, the other thing is, though, I think the movie wasn't really using Perry's brain in the way that the book did.
Yeah.
So in the book, he eats the brain. It's having, like, a bigger effect on him than any other brain ever has. Obviously, that leads into things with Julie. But also, he kind of has this ongoing relationship with Perry that you're never really sure if it's really Perry or if it isn't. So there's, I don't know how many times, probably five or six times where he'll have, initially when he's eating the brain, and I think once the brain is finished, even then he has sort of dreams as well that relate to it.
Well, Perry, he even has Perry talking to him when he's just walking around.
Yeah. So basically it starts off with just sort of reliving Perry's memories, and then they interact within those moments where it's like Perry will be talking to R, and the book sort of goes into, because it's told from the first person perspective of R, it'll have R like, is this me or are you, is that actually Perry? Am I Perry's afterlife? Like,
yeah.
It's all sort of unclear what's happening, which was really interesting trying to sort of work it out. And I could see, though, why they removed that from the movie, because it wasn't really clear what was happening, and it would have meant a lot more of Perry, whereas the movie was obviously trying to focus more on Julie.
Yeah.
But it was sort of nice in the book to have this other relationship, because R really only talks to Em and Julie otherwise.
Yeah. They do that one time in the movie when he has his dream. He dreams for the first time, and then they're in the orchard.
Yeah.
And the dream Perry tells him, what are you doing here, corpse? And I thought that was a good alluding to how it is in the book.
Yeah.
The Perry in his mind is kind of derogatory towards him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in the book, they kind of become friends in a way, even though you're not sure Perry's real. Whereas in the film, it's more like Perry's just a rude teenager kind of thing. Oh, you know, older than that. But also, even in the movie, it's like they do a good job of implanting the thing from the book, but turning it more into what they're trying to do with the movie. So they have Perry talk to R, but then they have Julie talk to R, and it turns into more of a Julie and R interaction, even though it was within Perry's memory.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was an example of, turning it into more what they actually want out of it, but still getting the use of the thing that otherwise would have been entirely cut.
Did you find it funny in the movie how little blood he had to put on her before they couldn't smell her?
Yeah, that was... I was like, really?
He smears such... So in the book, he smears blood all over her face so that the other zombies can't smell that she's alive. And even then I was like, surely you'd have to cover like 90% of her body before you couldn't smell her.
Yeah.
But in the movie, he literally smears like three fingers worth of blood on her face.
And later on, there's even less.
And then the zombies are like, oh, she's a zombie. And I'm like, yeah, that doesn't fly with me. She has so much skin showing, like, not like, you know, her midriff showing or anything, but like her hands and, you know, most of her face isn't covered. She's so clean. She's so clean. And I'm like, that wouldn't work.
Yeah, I didn't... It was like, this is probably the main, or maybe even only part of the movie that I'm not at all buying.
Yeah.
And I think they tried to cover it by having R, like, smell her and be like, yeah, this is good.
Yeah, yeah. But still, I didn't believe it. I was like, no, this isn't working.
I didn't really... Maybe they didn't have enough of whatever they were smearing on her, but it was like, just use the whole hand, and at least that'll get most of her face.
Do at least half her face. Like, get him to really smear half her face, and then, like, and down her neck maybe a bit.
Maybe they kept having to redo the scene, and it was like, we don't want to have to keep redoing her makeup.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know.
It was just sort of, the second time in particular, it was like a tiny bit on her temple and that was it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that wasn't, it was like no deal for me.
Yeah. So that was quite funny.
I made a note. So one of the differences, most of the movie is from R's perspective rather. But we do flashback. This is what we were talking about before with the bit with M seeing the hand holding and having his own vision. We do get to see that in the movie, as opposed to when R meets back up with M telling him that he's had that. So yeah, that was just it's better in the movie to have that kind of different perspective a couple times, as opposed to just being from R's perspective.
I think it worked in the book, given that it was a book.
Yeah.
So for instance, the fact that the dialogue is different between M and R shows you that M is changing. Whereas in the film, that wouldn't really have done it, partly because they're barely talking with each other. But given that films are different to books, I think that the way they showed it was a good change to make.
I found they really used lines from the book in the movie.
Yeah.
As well. That was, I like it when movies do that. If you've read the book and you can hear actual dialogue from the book being used in the film, it makes it feel so much more authentic to the book.
Yeah, and there were some things where even though they had changed stuff, they sort of put something similar, or, you know, to achieve the same purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So this is skipping ahead a bit, but when R is in the stadium or in the city with Nora and Julie, and they're putting makeup on him to help him try to pass as human.
Yeah.
In the book, there's a line where R says something to the audience like, at that moment, I wish that my life was a movie and this bit could have been a montage instead of however many grueling hours it took to put the makeup on. And I was like, oh, I wonder if they'll do this as a montage in the movie. And they didn't really, because there wasn't enough material to turn it into a montage, because it's just like putting foundation on him and then him having a shower, other way around. And it's like, what? How can you? It'd be skim between two things, isn't really a montage. But they inserted Nora having this joke where she's playing Pretty Woman over the whole thing. So it's sort of, in a way, it's
replacing a montage.
It suggests a montage. Yeah, because it felt like it was leading into one. But also, it was replacing one joke with a different joke that it sort of achieved the same thing, given that what they otherwise would have done, like they were doing something different.
Yeah.
But still kept that sort of a joke in there. So it was good that they, even when they weren't directly taking things from the book, they were putting other things in the place of that.
Yeah.
Did you find Julie was more scared than you thought she would be when he, kidnapped is not really the right word, but so basically he saves her, they go back to the airplane because it's not safe for her to do anything else, really. And in the book, it felt like you really got a sense that she has grown up in an apocalypse. Like, she's really a survivor. She wasn't particularly scared outwardly. Mm-hmm. It was just, she was sort of like, at some point I'm going to have to try to escape. I don't really know what's happening. Whereas in the film, it was more like, oh no, I'm being kidnapped by a zombie. What? He's going to kill me. I'm so scared about this.
I think that's also, though, what works in a book and what works when you're actually seeing.
That's what I was thinking.
Something.
Yeah.
Because I think if she hadn't at least cried a little bit when he kidnapped her, when you're actually looking at it, I just think that wouldn't work.
Yeah.
Whereas in a book, you can get away with so much more because you're explaining why.
And you can imagine it in a way that works. Yeah. But when you're seeing a person who is young and looks like a real person, and real people did not grow up in apocalypses, usually. I think that's sort of what I was thinking. Maybe they had changed that just because it was easier. They would have been fighting against people reading it that way anyway in the film, so they might as well just sort of go with it.
Yeah.
And same with the more romantic angle that they have. I wondered whether when you have two young, attractive people, is everyone going to read that as they're about to start dating? Yeah, even though, so in the book, it sort of feels like R and Julie want to spend time together, but it's not very romantic at all most of the time. And so even then, like, sometimes there are bits in the book where, so for instance, Nora talks about them as if they are dating, and it's actually a bit weird because it's like, that's not really what the situation is. Whereas in the film, they do lean more on that. And I wondered whether that's maybe partly because the audience is going to want to read it that way anyway, because they're young and attractive, so you might as well just go with it instead of trying to fight against it.
Yeah.
Whereas if the characters had been in their 40s, maybe something more like in the book would have worked better.
In the book, most of the ways that they show that they're becoming romantically involved are, like, physical. Like, them sleeping in the same bed and that kind of thing. It's not spoken.
Yeah. And even that, you don't have to read it as romantic, because it's just sort of, well, there's, like, you know, there's zombies around.
yeah. Like, especially when they're going back to the compound and they sleep in... Does he sleep on the floor in the book, or does he sleep in the bed?
So do you mean when he's taking her home?
Yeah.
Yeah, so in the book, the bed is huge and they're, like, on opposite sides.
They sleep in the same bed, don't they?
Yeah, but they're, like, 4 feet apart from each other.
Yeah.
Whereas in the film...
He sleeps on the floor.
He's on the floor. And I think they might have done that because you can't be that far apart and still be in the shot. It's easier if they're not as far apart, they're closer together, but he is on the floor and she's on the edge.
Also, because they'd already suggested romantic tension between them.
Yeah.
So I think if you suggested romantic tension between them sleeping in the same bed really ratchets that up quite high.
Yeah.
Whereas in the book, the romantic tension hadn't come in yet.
Yeah.
So them sleeping in the same bed is more like survival.
Yeah, if in the book I read it as partly survival and partly that she is going to go to bed and she's like, this just feels rude. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to this other room. He's fine. He hasn't done anything wrong. He's trying to help. It's just, you might as well be like, look, you just come in. It's fine. Yeah. We can sleep in the same room.
I think she realizes, like, if we get, like, right down to it, like, he has no, like, sexual attraction to her because he's dead.
Yeah. So and he has no ability for anything to happen.
He's perfectly safe. Like,
yeah.
Like, apart from being a zombie.
Yeah. And she already knows he's not going to bite her.
He's not going to bite her. Yeah.
She trusts that already. So it's not.
Yeah.
Whereas I think in the movie, you would read into that way more.
Yeah. You really would. Yeah.
Yeah. This is minor, but Perry's dad was a zombie in the movie.
Yeah.
And in the book, it was just like, yeah, he died and there was something fell on him because he was working in construction. And I wondered why they did that, but it might have been just to add some action. But it was sort of interesting to think about whether they were trying to use that to establish this is a threat that has actually been personal.
Yeah, I think that's how they got to Perry being, because then it shows Perry signing up as with military.
Yeah.
Because they had to show that Perry had got past it. Got to the point that he got to a lot with a lot less storytelling. So I think showing that his dad was zombified and then having him sign up, you make the connection a lot more quickly than you do in the book that he's basically suicidal.
Yeah, but that's interesting because they could have just had him be always. He was always kind of a guy who liked shooting things or something. Like they didn't need to have the bit where he wants to be a farmer or whatever it is initially, and then sign up for security. So it's sort of nice that they did that, though, because it means they're keeping the bit from the book where he did want to...
Yeah, I think he did have hope initially.
Though. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that it allowed them to have the flashback with him meeting Julie's dad, or not meeting, but having dinner with Julie's family and talking about wanting to do something other than going into security.
Yeah.
But then still having been in security, so it makes sense that he's there when R kills him at the beginning. Yeah. Yeah, okay, that's interesting.
So we're getting to the point in the movie that it now diverges quite a lot. So
I guess we're at the part where Julie has gone home, R took her home, sort of.
Yeah.
Although she kind of...
She ditches him.
Yeah, which happened in the book as well. So they get... Basically, there's a car at the airport that he's been playing around with. She shows him how to drive it in the few days together.
Yeah.
Although I think she does most of the driving anyway. And then he agrees to take her home. The Bernie's trying to attack them when they're leaving. Then they drive away and with M sort of helps to distract from the Bernie's. And then, so they're driving away. Meanwhile, M gets chased out, which comes back later. They stop at a house because it's raining and they need to stay somewhere. It's the middle of the night. She's super cold. And then they be at the house with all the bed sharing and stuff that we were just talking about. And then he wakes up in the morning. So that must be the first time he dreams, right? Or no, they do sleep occasionally. I'd forgotten that. So
yes, he had slept and dreamt at the airport.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they... Oh, no, I was just thinking in that house because he must be asleep because he wakes up and she's gone.
Yeah.
But they established in the book that the zombies do kind of sleep, but it's just sort of like they become so exhausted over a period of weeks or months or whatever.
Yeah,
they just sort of shut down for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they don't dream. And then so becoming able to dream is part of showing his transition to being alive again. Anyway, so Julie has taken the car and gone back to her house with her dad.
Yeah.
I guess that's what we're picking up now. And R basically decides that he needs to see her to talk about the fact that everything's changing.
Yeah. It's really funny in the book, the way he gets in.
Yeah. So he meets up with M, and M has these other zombies who have also been chased out because they're starting to change.
Yeah. And they form a plan. So basically, because R is able to run, all the zombies are able to run now, which they couldn't do before. They only shuffled. But R is the best at it and, like, the best at pretending to look human.
And he's also the one who wants to get in.
Yeah, he's also the one that wants to get in.
Yeah.
So they, basically, the other zombies chase him and he runs like he's running from them and runs past the guards who are shooting at the zombies because they just don't look at him because he's acting like a human. They think he's a human.
I think he yells something as well.
Yeah, he yells, like, help me. Yeah. Yeah. And so he gets in that way and... then the zombies start running away because he's got in, and the guards are like, what the hell are the zombies doing? Because usually they'd just be relentless, you know, coming at them.
And even if they're leaving because they're getting shot at, it's like, why? How are they able to, they look like they're kind of human. Like,
yeah, they're kind of like dodging and like weaving and stuff. Which even, is not,
just more fluid movements.
Yeah, which is not like how zombies are. Mm. So he gets stopped by an immigration officer, but the guards are like, hey, come look at this. So the immigration officer basically says, stay here. And R is able to slip away without getting checked for zombification, basically.
Yeah. Whereas in the movie, they don't do it like that. So I think partly probably because it's a city rather than a stadium, maybe. But they basically have R just break in through a way that he saw in his memories Perry and Julie had got out before.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I think is, again, when you see it in the movie, is a better way of doing it than... I don't think it would have been believable.
I think it could have worked, but it wouldn't really have fit the tone. I think, watching it kind of felt like they might have been like, we don't want to pay all the other actors to be there for this, so it's just you. So it was sort of weird because it sort of undermined the fact that, like, how if a zombie can just break in, it's not very secure. But maybe. It relied on having the memory. Anyway, I think it was good to establish that he can learn things from the memories, and also not to have to sort of do the possibly cartoonish tone thing that mm-hmm. happened in the book.
Yeah.
It was sort of interesting that they changed that.
And so he meets up with Julie and Nora. This is the same in the movie, except... This is the
balcony bit.
Yeah, the balcony bit that's very Romeo and Juliet. He spends a lot more time with them in the... book, like hanging out in the city, and they don't go to Julie's father.
Yeah. So in the book, he's with them. I don't know if he wants to see the settlement or if they want to show him or something. But anyway, it works out that they're putting all this makeup on him to show him around.
Yeah.
Whereas then they go out drinking and he accidentally on purpose bites someone sort of in self-defense, and that turns into the problem.
He gets intoxicated because he's started to turn into a human.
Yeah.
Because earlier in the movie, earlier in the book, they show that he drinks alcohol and it doesn't affect him. But then later on, he's given like quite a bit of vodka and he gets really intoxicated. And so he stumbles out in front of this guard who's like, you're a zombie. And then is going to kill him. So he bites him and turns him into a zombie, but he can't bring himself to take the brain, which is how they, if they take the brain, they kill them, as opposed to turning them into a zombie as well.
I think also he gets knocked out or something. Well, whatever happens, the guy gets away. And so then, like, I don't think anyone else dies, so the humans take care of it. But then they know there's a zombie there because someone turned this guy that we just found.
Yeah, someone bit this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the whole settlement goes into lockdown. And so then Julie Sad shows up. Instead of doing that, in the movie, they kind of collapse things together. So instead of putting makeup on R to take him around the settlement, they put makeup on him to take him through the settlement to Julie's father.
Yeah.
And so it skips sort of right to that rather than having everything go into lockdown.
Yeah.
I think it was nice to remove the bit where he killed the guy because even in the book, I was like, oh, it's... I wish he didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
It sort of worked out okay. It didn't add annoying complications, really. But it was... Yeah, it was just sort of a shame that he killed someone, even though he didn't eat them. So it was sort of nice not to do that. But also, it was sort of weird to me that they thought that going to Julie's dad would be a good idea.
Yeah, I think, though, that kind of plays into this being... The movie being kind of more young adult than the book is.
And even the father being a more reasonable person.
Yeah. Because in a lot of young adult stuff, they will go to an adult who then turn out to not be reasonable.
Yeah.
At least to start off with. Because that would be, for kids, that would be the first thing you'd do is go to an adult.
Especially when it's your own parent.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. So I think that just leans into the more young adult-y feel of the movie.
Yeah. And also they removed all of the stuff in the book where Julie basically doesn't get along with her dad. And I mean, they have their, like, father-daughter tensions.
Mm-hmm.
But she ultimately still trusts him and thinks that he'll do the right thing.
And he obviously still loves her.
Yeah.
Whereas in the book, it's, like, it's questionable whether he even still loves her.
Yeah. And she definitely does not think that going anywhere near, like, she does not think he'd be able to be convinced of the fact that the zombies are changing.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that they, it makes more sense in the movie that they would do it. But because I had come from reading the book, I was like, really? You think this is a good idea?
Yeah. This guy's crazy.
Yeah.
So they get to Julie's father. This is in the movie. And he's like, that guy's a zombie. So he pulls a gun on him. And it's a kind of parallel to the book because Nora then pulls a gun on him and tells them to run. So they run. I like the bit where he's like, you're not going to shoot me. Nora. Like, he realizes after the fact, like, oh, actually, I don't need to be scared of this girl with this gun.
She's like, yeah, I totally will.
So then they're running through the... They run back out to where the zombies have collected in the stadium. And there's, like, loads more of them now. They have a quick conversation about how the zombies are going to fight the bonies and how the military is coming, basically.
Well, the bonies are coming as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So all the zombies that have gathered there are the ones who have been changing. And the bonies have decided, actually, we've got to do something about this.
Yeah.
So they're coming. Also, the human military is coming because they know that Julie's just run off with a zombie. And also, they already knew the bonies were coming, I think. Or the zombies gathering in the stadium, I guess, was it. So the humans were already preparing for battle anyway.
For battle, yeah.
Yeah.
Julie and R basically, like, get further and further up the stadium. And they, the bonies are chasing them. And the military has met up with the big crowd of zombies. And they've realized that the fleshy zombies are fighting the bony zombies. And they have this moment of, like, who do we shoot? And M goes, this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shoot this one. And then so the grunt soldiers realize that they don't need to shoot the fleshy zombies.
Yeah. And they have a few shots of that where instead of focusing on R and Julie, it shows the soldiers and the fleshies collaborating on taking out the bonies.
Yeah. And then it gets to a bit that parallels the book again, which is R and Julie reach a doorway and they open it and it's basically out to an 8-story drop. And that, but in the book, they're being chased by the military, and in the movie, they're being chased by bonies.
Yeah. So in the book, this actually happens before they meet up with the zombie horde, right? So this is when they're trying to get out. So it's the thing where Nora has stopped Julie's father from being able to do anything, and Julie and R run away, and they're sort of being chased by the military people who were also there.
Yeah, so this character, General Rosso, comes up in this bit, which has been collapsed with Julie's father in the movie.
Yeah, so Rosso is basically the more reasonable of the people who are in charge.
Yes, yeah, and he's kind of like her uncle kind of thing. Like, not actually her uncle, but like a
family friend.
Family friend, yeah. Yeah, and so in both cases, R grabs Julie and basically shields her as they fall. And so his body hits the ground. So in the movie, they hit the ground, which...
In the book, you mean?
In the book, sorry, they hit the ground, which, again, I was like, there's no way Julie would, like, come out of that scot-free. Like, she would break bones at the very least.
Yeah, even just because landing on another person isn't going to help.
You would break probably both your arms and both your legs at the very least. Like, falling from an 8-story drop. Like, that's not enough shielding. Anyway.
Yeah.
They kind of fix that because they fall into water in the movie.
I think they might have done that also just because then they can use probably actual stunt people. Or, even if it wasn't people, it's just more believable.
Yeah. So R hits the bottom of the pool that they fall into, but Julie, you know, doesn't hit the ground, so... That's more believable.
Yeah, and because he's still enough of a zombie, it doesn't kill him.
Yeah.
And he's sort of... I think in the book, it sort of talks about how more than ever before, or even for the first time, his body is, like, healing itself. So it's sort of... It feels like whatever changes have been happening, where he's becoming more alive, sort of fix his body from all the breakage that he just experienced.
Yeah. In the book, then they meet up with the other zombies, and then they're finding the bonies, and... they get back to the stadium and they're on the stadium roof, basically. And that's where Grigio gets back to them, Julie's father. and Boney climbs the stadium and attacks her father, and her father basically has like a last look at her, and she can see that he's, I think he says something to her, but I can't remember what it was. And she sees that he's given up, and he and the Boney topple from the stadium, and he's killed.
Yeah. But also, I think the only reason the Boney got him is because she had actually stabbed him or something to get him away. Because he's going to kill R.
He's going to kill R, yeah.
Yeah. So it's sort of the climax where the bad guy, who is her dad, is going to destroy everything. And then Julie steps in and...
Oh, and just before this in the book, they've kissed. And both their eyes have changed to a golden color. And this is where R is fully alive, because one of the cuts on his body starts bleeding, and she's like, oh my God, you're bleeding, like, you're alive now. And when her father sees that her eyes have changed color, he's like, you're a zombie as well, so he's going to shoot her, even though Rosso is saying, like, don't shoot her, something's happened, like...
Yeah.
He dies, and then Rosso allows them both to live, and then shows things changing, basically. Yeah.
Did you take it that her dad was turning into a Boney? Because that isn't what happened, but that's what I thought what was happening initially. So basically he's falling off the stadium, and it sort of says as he's falling, like, the flesh just, like, peels off his bones.
Yeah, and so I thought that, like, was weird.
Well, I think that's what's meant to happen when you turn into a Boney. It's just like, you've lost so much hope that you just sort of, it's only the bones. But then the bones just sort of land on the ground, and he didn't become anything.
Yeah.
It was just sort of like he evaporated.
Yeah. So I thought... The bones just get crushed.
Yeah. So I thought... And the Boney that was with him just, like, runs off into the forest, wherever the Boneys are going. That wasn't really clear what's happening.
Yeah.
So I thought what was happening was that he was turning into a Boney, because, like, that totally would have made sense, right? If, you know, he was sort of the parallel of them anyway, and now that he's dead, he would become one and go off with them. But it just sort of made it sound like, no, he's just gone.
Yeah.
So I wasn't really sure on... How to read,
I was unsure in that bit as well.
Yeah. I could believe that it totally makes sense, and I just don't get it, but...
Yeah.
Anyway, so differently in the movie...
So they've landed in the water, and this is when General Grigio and the soldiers pull up to where they are, basically.
Yeah.
And...
Well, they kiss in the water.
It
has this bit where he is sort of lying in the water. So he hits his head really hard on the bottom of the... pool or whatever it is, and then he's not getting up, and Julie is worried because this is weird, and then she pulls him out of the water and he's fine, like, she says his name and he sort of comes to, and then they kiss in the moment of everything that's happening. Her eyes don't change, but his turn blue, so they're just normal human eyes again, rather than the gray that they've been the whole way through. Actually, it's a slight side point. When I watched this movie, that's the first time I realized that I knew what contact lenses look like on a human eye. Because I'm like, oh, I think that's okay. Now I know what contacts look like, because they're just so obvious.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he basically is fully human now. And then suddenly out of, you know, behind them, her dad shoots him in the shoulder, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, quite reasonable, really, that he would do this, I guess. But
yeah, Julie's like, what the hell? Yeah. He's changing. You know, you've got to listen to me. And then she turns around and R is bleeding into the water. So you see, like, a big pool of blood pooling around him. And that's when she's like, oh my God, he's bleeding. He's alive. The soldiers start putting down their guns. Not putting them down, but, like,
lowering
their guns. Yeah. And as she kind of... keeps saying, like, he's alive, Dad, he's alive. Like, Grigio also puts down his gun and signals to the soldiers, like, the situation has changed, basically.
Yeah. I think they did a really good job of being convincing that he would have been convinced.
Yeah.
Because they'd already shown, like, when he was driving towards them, they were getting the thing on the radio of the other soldiers being like, we're getting reports of, like, the fleshies are fighting against the Bonies. And, like, he was like, wait, can you repeat that? So... he knew that something weird was happening and maybe the zombies weren't as bad as he thought.
Yeah.
And then as soon as it showed that R was bleeding, I think he's like, yeah, okay, this is weird and he doesn't have to die.
Yeah. So that's a lot happier ending in the movie. Yeah. And then it shows the Boneys in the movie, it shows the Boneys being chased away.
And killed. Then, he's like, the narration, Specifically says, yeah, we just killed them all.
Yeah, and the ones we didn't kill just withered away.
Yeah.
Which
was more of a conclusion. So in the book, it was like, not really clear why they ran away.
Where did they go?
Or where they were going. Yeah, but the book also was, it really felt like there's still a lot of work before the apocalypse is over. Even though this was the beginning of everything being improved. Whereas in the movie, it sort of felt like, yeah, everything done.
Yeah. And the movie ends with Ara and Julie sitting on a hillside, I guess, watching the wall being exploded.
Yeah.
And having the conversation about Ara's name, which is pretty much how the book ends.
Yeah.
Which is the point in the book where I was like, oh, Romeo, because I'm a dummy.
Yeah.
So did we like the book?
Yeah, I liked the book.
Yeah, I liked it. I found it heavy.
Yeah, it was much less of a romance, even though... So the movie was very much about the romance, as I keep talking about. The book wasn't really about that at all, even though the marketing for the book made it sound like it would be.
Yeah.
It was really, it was about people with depression in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, though, part of the reason I found it heavy was because of things are always different in the context that you read them in.
Mm.
And I think I always listen to audiobooks on my commute. So, like, turning this on first thing in the morning when I've just woken up was like, oh my God, this is a lot to be taking in on my commute in the morning. I liked the movie. I thought the movie was good. I think I liked it better having read the book because I had a lot more context. I saw the movie for the first time, I think, shortly after it came out, and I don't think I liked it as much the first time. I think I found it more of, like, kind of cheesy. Yeah. But I really liked it watching it after having read the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked both. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that, like, we've obviously talked a lot about the differences between them. But I hope that it's clear that pretty much everything that they changed, it's sort of obvious why they changed it.
Mm-hmm.
It was either to match some other change that they needed to make, which was good, right? Because sometimes they'll change stuff and not change the things that sort of don't make sense anymore. So, yeah, I think they did it. Sort of your next question, I guess, is a good adaptation. I think they did a good job of adapting it, given that a lot of the things in the book wouldn't really have worked on film.
Yeah, I think they did a good job of adapting it, given they chose to make it more for young adults as well.
Yeah.
Which I don't think the book is necessarily for young adults. I think it's probably new adult instead of young adult, especially as the two characters are definitely adults in the book.
Even though the characters... So, are in the book, it's really unclear what age he is. Yeah,
but he's got a suit and tie on, so you assume that he's at least 18.
Yeah, well, and I had taken it to be he's probably late 20s.
Yeah.
At least. And I think the actors would have been about 27 when they did the movie. So, like, it matched, right? But the character, so Julie felt, like, I think to communicate Julie's character from the book in the film, she would have had to be at least 10 years older than she actually was. And so given that they were using the ages of the characters in the book, they probably did about the only thing that would have been believable. So, yeah. I think it would have been interesting to see a film where they tried to make it more heavy. where they sort of did the kind of hopelessness thing rather than the love thing. But given that that would have been difficult, I can see why they didn't want to do that.
Yeah, I think it just would have been less marketable. So
yeah,
I can see why they did what they did with the movie.
Yeah, and it's quite possible that it actually would have been, like, they would have failed to do it well if they had tried to do it the other way.
Yeah. All right, so our next episode is Watership Down on the 29th of June, which I am looking forward to. That's one of my And you can find us on Facebook, We Read the Book Discussion Group. There's not a lot of people in it, but we do post in there, so come and join us. So thank you for listening. I've been Lois Mitchell.
And I've been Braids?
Bye.
Goodbye. I've been, and I've been.